This episode of Between the Rows was brought to you in part by Bayer. Bayer continues to make significant investments into the development of new breeding technologies and state-of-the-art cropping solutions to ensure the profitability and sustainability of your farm. This season, grow with confidence. Grow with Bayer. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. Today, Glacier Farm Media Editorial Director Laura Rance talks with AgriTrend's Rob Sake about the Canola 100 Challenge.
We wanted to set up AgriPrize to be a moonshot for farmers, where inspiration, the inspiration being the John Deere Prize, fosters innovation. And we've seen all kinds of innovation in this contest.
Alexis Kinlan of Alberta Farmer Express reports on a high-tech approach to detecting the emotions of cattle and sheep. And Bruce Burnett looks at the Black Sea wheat market.
I wouldn't be as concerned about spring wheat supplies leaking out of Russia necessarily, but just the massive amount of wheat they produced this year is negative for the wheat market, and that's going to put a damper on spring wheat prices.
All on Between the Rows with this week's host, Robert Arneson.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson of the Western Producer and the host of this week's podcast. Today, we'll be talking about Canadian farmers chasing 100 bushel canola yields, increased wheat production in the Black Sea region, and we'll find out if camera technology can tell us how cattle and sheep are feeling. Cows, if they had hands, would be excellent poker players because it's hard to read their faces. But an animal welfare expert, who now lives in Toronto, thinks it's possible to interpret the emotions of cattle and sheep with high-tech cameras. Joining us to talk about the research is Alexis Kinlan of Alberta Farmer Express. Hi, Alexis.
Hi.
So you're at a beef industry conference in Calgary right now. Can you tell us a bit about that conference and what's caught your attention?
Well, this is one of the biggest beef industry conferences that they have in Calgary. This is the second year of it. There's over 675 people registered. And it's kind of a meeting of a whole bunch of different groups. They're going to make the selection for the Canadian Cattlemen Young Leaders. There's the Canada-United States Agricultural Roundtable and the Canadian Roundtable for Sustainable Beef is meeting as well.
So is there something in particular that you're looking forward to following or something that's caught your eye?
Well, there's a lot of discussion. I've already talked to some producers, and people, of course, are worried about NAFTA. And producers who are attending already want to check out how to connect the dots and see how, you know, the industry's working and what their checkoff dollars are doing and stuff. So I'm just going to kind of be wandering around, checking out some of the meetings and talking to producers and finding out what stories are coming. I mean, with 675 people, there's bound to be stuff that's going to happen here.
All right, great. So just shifting gears, so you recently wrote a piece looking at kind of the science of livestock emotions and how to measure what livestock, cattle, sheep might be thinking and feeling. Can you tell us who's doing this research and what they're trying to do?
Well, the person who did the research was named Mirjam Geskin. She grew up in New Zealand and did her postdoc at the U of A. And what she was doing was using motion capture technology to track slight movements in expression in sheep and dairy cattle.
And so can you just talk a bit about motion capture? Like, what does that do exactly? Is that something that's used in other technologies or in other media? Like, what is it normally used for?
Normally it's used for Hollywood movies and just kind of like motion capture was used to capture, you know, Andy Serkis, who's been in Planet of the Apes and Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
They usually capture his expression, and that's how they would transform that his expressions and his face into Gollum or Caesar from Planet of the Apes.
So this, sorry, go ahead.
It's a technology that's used a lot by Hollywood, but as far as I know, this is the first time Meerjam is a pioneer and one of the first people to use this kind of capture to track animal emotions.
So I guess the question is, like, what is the objective here? Like, what is she trying to achieve with this technology? What does she want to know about what cows or sheep are thinking and feeling?
Well, what they did was also to see if the animal, what kind of thing, what kind of motion or what kind of expressions makes an animal makes when it has pain as compared to no pain. Quite often, animals will have to go through painful procedures, they're called, as part of life, you know, getting a tail docked or getting castrated. And with these micro movements, they can track really if the animal is in pain and capture those subtle changes that people might miss out.
So, you know, I guess I have to ask, you know, why is this necessary? Isn't this something that, you know, farmers with experience would kind of learn to recognize what their animals are feeling? Is it something that you can sort of learn through experience or not?
It is something that can be learned through experience, but, you know, animal welfare specialists are always looking to make things better and to make procedures less painful for animals. So this is just another way of increasing the humane nature of animal procedures and making sure that animals are treated fairly and well and knowing more about them.
So I noted in your article that this researcher has done some work on sheep. Has she had any success with this technology at all?
Yeah, she's done work on sheep, and it was mainly in capturing their faces. And then when she moved to Alberta to do her postdoc, they used dairy cattle, and so then they used the back end to capture subtle movements and changes in the shifting of the animal to tell if they were in heat, I think.
Okay. And what was your general impression of what she accomplished here and what she's trying to do? Were you sort of surprised or caught off guard by this, or what do you think about all this?
Oh, I think it's great. It's very innovative and creative, and we've had a lot of response to the story so far, good reading, and people are very interested and have been discussing it. And yeah, it caught my attention when I first read about it in the university publication, and that's why I felt I wanted to do the story. It was just something so different.
Yeah, well, it definitely caught my attention too when I read it. So thanks, Alexis, for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Alexis Kinlan, a reporter with Alberta Farmer Express. This is Between the Rows. I'm Robert Arneson. Canola yields of 60 or 70 bushels per acre are now commonplace in Western Canada. But what about 100 bushels per acre? Is that possible under real-world conditions? Canola 100 is a competition for growers hoping to reach that lofty target. This summer, Laura Rantz, editorial director with Glacier Farm Media, spoke to Rob Sake of AgriTrend about the Canola 100 Challenge.
Well, I think when we struck the partnership of Glacier Farm Media and John Deere and AgriTrend, the objective was to start an AgriPrize competition, the Canola 100, that would stretch the imaginations of farmers. So we had set a goal of 100 bushels per acre of dryland canola. And last year, the leader was Mike Nelson out of Wetaskiwin with a confirmed yield of spring-seeded canola on 50 contiguous acres of 82.3 bushels per acre. And so what we're learning is, A, that it's attainable, that the growers, first of all, if you give them a competition, something to shoot for, that they'll rise to the occasion, and that, B, that it is attainable. It's not like it's so far out of reach that it can't be done. And so I'm really excited to see how we're going to do this year and again next year. And there will be a winner. And the prize, of course, is that fleet of John Deere equipment that the competitors are shooting for.
And they get to use that equipment for a one-year period of time, the winner? Yeah,
I think the parameters around it are that John Deere four-wheel drive tractor, a air seeder, high-clearance sprayer, swather, and a combine for 100 hours each. And I'm sure, you know, John Deere will work with those farmers to figure out the configuration, but that's the prize. It's about $250,000 prize. So we're really excited to have John Deere sponsor that prize at the end of this moonshot. And for me, this really bounced off of something I've been following called the X Prize Foundation with Peter Diamandis. And we wanted to set up Agri Prize to be a moonshot for farmers where inspiration, the inspiration being the John Deere prize, fosters innovation. And we've seen all kinds of innovation in this contest.
How many farmers are participating?
We have about 50 farmers participating across Western Canada. We had a couple from Ontario last year, but this year it's mainly Western Canada. So those are the guys that anteed up to come into the contest, and then we'll see how many go through registration for verification. Last year, I think we pulled off about 21, 24 verifications, but we had a number of the competitors, probably a half dozen, that simply couldn't get the crop off because of snow. Yeah.
And this year's going to be a tough year, too.
You know, it is. I mean, we've got a different kind of a year this year. Last year, of course, we had too much moisture, but a lot of the guys were fully saturated going into this spring. And now, of course, we're looking skyward for some rainfall. But I've been in a number of the fields, and there's some pretty crackerjack canola crops out there. Granted, they're going to need a drink here in the next little while. So hopefully right after Ag in Motion, there'll be a nice rainfall as a present.
Thank you for letting us get through the show.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know, the big theme this year, you know, and as it is every year, I suppose, is innovation. Mm. And one of the things that we're seeing at shows like this is the kinds of innovation that are taking place in agriculture. AgriTrend's been around for 20 years. What have been the big advances that you've seen in that time period?
AgriTrend was founded way back when to help farmers do a better job of, in particular, around the fertility program. So that's where we started. We revolutionized a lot of the analytics around soil sampling because we do multiple depths and full scale analysis of nutrients. But I think the biggest change that's happened is that we now can apply that input more precisely. So people are really, they get excited about precision agriculture. And I say, that's not the silver bullet. The concept of precision agriculture allows us to deliver agronomy more precisely. And I think that's really the biggest innovation. The ability to take our genetics, the ability to take our crop inputs and apply them, you know, in a precise manner. When you hear on social media that farmers dose their crops with chemicals and waste fertilizers, that is absolute nonsense. I mean, we're now putting fertilizer at variable rates throughout the field in up to like 3, 4, 5 foot resolution. It's quite amazing. So I think that's been the biggest change, is that the equipment, the technology around satellite guidance, the sectional shutoffs, the variable rate controllers have allowed us to take our agronomic brains and stretch them in ways we haven't been able to do before.
That was Laura Rantz of Glacier Farm Media and Rob Sake of AgriTrend talking about the Canola 100 Challenge. For more information, go to www.agriprize.com. This is Robert Arneson, and you're listening to Between the Rows. In June and early July, spring wheat prices went crazy when a drought developed in the U.S. Northern Plains. But North Dakota and Montana aren't the only places in the world where farmers grow spring wheat. Here to talk about wheat production in the Black Sea region is Bruce Burnett, Glacier Farm Media Director of Weather and Markets Information. Hi, Bruce.
Hi.
So when I do my reporting on markets, I often kind of refer to the Black Sea region as kind of a generic term, but honestly, I don't totally understand what that means. Can you just sort of define that region?
Well, when we talk about the Black Sea region, and obviously in the grain trade, That's more focused on the exporting countries that are located around the Black Sea. So those would include Romania, Ukraine, Russia, as well as Kazakhstan, that does export some grain through Black Sea ports as well. So when we talk about the Black Sea as a generic term, it's a group of countries that are major wheat exporters now and produce a lot of wheat. Some of it spring wheat, but most of it, or the vast majority of it's actually soft winter wheat.
So is there differences in within the region in terms of what they produce, like in terms of spring wheat versus winter wheat?
Yes. Certainly in Romania, which produces about 8 million tons a year, 7, 8 million tons a year, and Ukraine, those are strictly soft wheat producers. And Ukraine produces between 25 and 30 million tons annually as well. Exclusively or almost exclusively winter wheat, unless they run into some planting problems in the fall and have to plant spring wheat instead. So those areas, the wheat's relatively low protein, not necessarily low quality, but again, on the lower side of the bread making ability because of the lower protein. The same is true for most of the southern Russian growing areas that adjoin Ukraine. So that area, which produces about three quarters of the total crop of wheat in Russia, is a winter wheat that's also fairly soft. There are some harder varieties, especially as you move inland in Russia, going towards the Urals. You enter a transition zone where they will plant maybe a third of the crop winter wheat, most of it spring wheat, and eventually, when you get into Siberia, Kazakhstan, and the Ural region, that is almost exclusively spring wheat, and the growing conditions are very similar to Western Canada.
And in terms of spring wheat production from that area, would it be comparable to Canada and the Northern Plains of the U.S. or more?
Certainly, the production levels, let's say this year in Russia, we have a 75 million ton plus crop, 77.5 million tons. About 25 to 28 million tons of that will be spring wheat. Add on to that another 14, 15 million tons from Kazakhstan, and that would represent probably the largest spring wheat growing region now in terms of total production. The problem with the production, though, is it's a lot like Western Canada. It's far away from ports. You have to transport over rail. And in Kazakhstan's case, you have to transport it through one or two different countries that don't necessarily want your wheat to get to port either. So there's some difficulties there. Even in Russia, the majority of the bread is made from the hard wheat.
Okay.
So they domestically use most of it. And although some of it gets into the export channels, not nearly as much as you would think, given that production. Now, in North America here, we produce it, we use it, but we also export a substantial amount on the spring wheat side. So when we talk about Black Sea wheat, we generally are talking about that soft white wheat, because that's generally exported in the international market.
All right. So I guess there's a USDA report that came out August 10, kind of suggesting that wheat production from the Black Sea region, you know, might offset losses in North America. How do you see the situation?
Well, again, you have to remember for the winter wheat crops, they're well into harvest. That's one of the reasons why USDA moved their numbers up, is because they're getting to see some of the harvest results. And so the winter wheat yields have been fantastic. The spring wheat, which is, again, a substantial portion of that whole region in terms of its production, is about the same stage as we are here. Okay. You don't know a lot about the yields, but the conditions in July were very good in Siberia, Kazakhstan, northern Kazakhstan, and the Urals region. So there's no reason to suspect that the yields might not even get better there. So, but to put this in perspective, North American production, that Mexico, Canada, the U.S., and wheat this year, USDA is paying in about 77.4 million tons, and Russia alone is producing 77.5 million tons. And the whole Black Sea region is well over 120 million tons of wheat production this year. So by sheer numbers, and that means that what happens in the Black Sea is important in the wheat markets globally.
So why haven't they seen the kind of shift away from wheat that we've seen in North America? Are they trying to experiment with different crops over there, like corn and soybeans, like we are here in Western Canada?
They do grow corn and soybeans, especially in Ukraine. Ukraine produces a crop of corn around 30 million tons. It's a major exporting crop. But generally speaking, they have some very established rotations, and wheat, especially winter wheat in some of these areas, major part of that whole agronomy package that they use in there. So they are low-cost producers, very efficient, but also they're very close to ports. If you are, let's say, growing wheat in southern Russia, you can truck your grain right to port. It's very, very close, and you can put it on a boat, either a small boat that goes around the Mediterranean basin, 3,000 to 5,000 tons, and you have many, many markets for that wheat. Or there are the deep sea ports in Ukraine and Russia that can also handle this grain and do it quite efficiently. So that, plus the fact that they're proximate to places like Egypt, which is the world's largest importer, make them very, very competitive in the international market.
So I guess for producers in Western Canada, they're wondering what this all means for especially spring wheat prices going forward in the next little while. What's your sense of that region's influence, I guess, on spring wheat prices in the next couple months?
Well, obviously with the big crop, the wheat prices themselves are going to be pressured lower. I wouldn't be as concerned about spring wheat supplies leaking out of Russia necessarily or Kazakhstan to fulfill some of the shortfall in demand that we're going to see here in North America. The markets are quite different, so I don't see that as a major negative on prices, but just the massive amount of wheat they produced this year is negative for the wheat market, and that's going to put a damper on spring wheat prices.
Last one, there's been many stories about protein or the shortage of protein and possibilities of a protein premium, you know, come this fall. What are you anticipating?
Well, again, protein, the protein levels that we're seeing in the Dakotas right now are quite high. So our traditional protein spreads may not be all that great. Some of the initial harvest in Western Canada, and it's really early days in the southern growing regions, which tended to be more drought impacted this year. Also, those proteins have been relatively high. So I wouldn't anticipate a big spread, let's say, between 13.5 and 14.5, let's say, protein. But there's certainly a huge spread between the low 11s and 14%, because that's essentially the premium that's reflected right now in those future markets.
Right. Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Bruce Burnett, Glacier Farm Media Director of Weather and Markets Information. That's it for today's episode of Between the Rows. If you enjoyed the program, please tell a friend or a neighbor. I'm Robert Arneson. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Between the Rows. Our goal at Bayer is to continue to progress our lineup of high-performing seed and crop protection solutions so that we can meet specific grower needs like yours. Because when it comes to your farm, Bayer is with you from beginning to end. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca. And sign up today.